Today's episode is sponsored in part by Modern Mammals, creators of a new hair washing product for men. You can help support Based on a True Story when you use the code BOATSPODCAST at modernmammals.com for 10% off. I've really been enjoying their shampoo light bar as an alternative to traditional shampoo. And I know it's in the name, but honestly, when I first used it, I was surprised at just how light and airy it feels. It reminds me of using a bar of soap for your hair, except it's even better than that because if you're like me, you don't like the residue that some actual bars of soap leave behind. And the shampoo light bar is easy to wash out without leaving any residue behind. Modern Mammals also focuses on creating products that help you keep your hair's natural oils so it's not left feeling poofy and frizzy. Go to modernmammals.com and use code BOATSPODCAST for 10% off. Again, that's modernmammals.com for 10% off with promo code BOATSPODCAST. Don't forget to use the promo code BOATSPODCAST so they know I sent you. Thanks, Modern Mammals. Okay, let's start today's episode.
Just before the turn of the century, director Michael Bay teamed up with Ben Affleck to create Armageddon. With a budget of $140 million that earned back over $200 million by the time it left theaters, Armageddon was a smash hit. Ben Affleck's salary for that movie was about $600,000. So the duo decided to try it again, this time teaming up for 2001's Pearl Harbor, again with a budget of about $140 million. This time, though, Ben Affleck decided to take a pay cut and instead work for a percentage. His salary for Pearl Harbor was $250,000, along with 7% of ticket sales. Pearl Harbor didn't do quite as well as Armageddon, but it still made enough to have Ben Affleck's take be about $10 million. In an interview about his 2012 film Argo, which we've already covered here on the show, Ben Affleck admitted he did Pearl Harbor for the wrong reasons. He did it for the money. For some comparison, 1970's Tora, Tora, Tora is another film depicting the attack on Pearl Harbor, but it was made with about a $25 million budget for the entire film, and it made about $30 million at the box office. With Pearl Harbor Day coming up on Thursday, this week we're going to do something a little bit different here on the show. Instead of picking one movie, I'm going to join up with Corey Constable from the Omitted podcast as we dive into the historical accuracies of both Pearl Harbor and Tora, 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 so you can decide which one you want to watch on Pearl Harbor Day. I'm Dan Lefebvre, and this is Based on a True Story. Before Corey joins us on the show, let's set up our game, Two Truths and a Lie. I'm going to give you three statements. Two of them are true, and one of them is a lie. Listen closely for the two truths scattered throughout the episode, and then by a process of elimination, you'll know which one is a lie. And, of course, we'll do a recap at the end of the episode to see how well you did. Okay, here are the two truths and one lie. Number one, there weren't any American pilots who made it into the air during the attack on Pearl. Number two, there was a document sent by the Japanese government to the American government that didn't make it before the attack. Number three, the Americans retaliated for Pearl Harbor by launching a surprise attack of their own on Japan, led by Major Doolittle. All right, got them? Without further ado, let's dive into my chat with Corey Constable about Pearl Harbor and Tora, Tora, Tora. December 7th marks the 76th anniversary of the attack on Pearl Harbor. In honor of that, we're going to do something special on this week's episode of Based on a True Story. So this week, I'm excited to be joined by the host of Omitted, Corey Constable. Corey's podcast is one of my favorite history podcasts, and his entire second season was dedicated to stories surrounding the attack on Pearl Harbor. Thanks for taking the time to join me today, Corey. And for those listening who haven't heard of Omitted, can you give us a quick overview of your podcast and where people can find it?
Hey, Dan, thanks for having me. Omitted is a narrative nonfiction history podcast where I tell some of the forgotten stories behind history's biggest events. So we all know the story of Titanic or Pearl Harbor or the Civil Rights Movement, But because those events were so big, there were a lot of names that got lost in the shuffle. So the stories were largely forgotten. So I really just want to go back through history and find some of those people whose names were missed and give them credit for being there and give them credit for playing a part in all that. So you can find it on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or you can stream the episodes at omittedpodcast.com.
Great. So this episode is going to be a little bit different than the typical episode of Based on a True Story. Now, I couldn't pick between Pearl Harbor and Tora Tora Tora, so we're going to be talking about both. And here's how it's going to work. I've set up the movie, or rather each movie, into three sections. So there's the prelude, the attack itself, and then the aftermath. And I'll provide a quick synopsis of how each movie gets covered in each of those sections. And then we'll go back and forth and chat about it to see how each movie handles the historical accuracy in that section. Finally, we'll decide which movie pulled off the historical accuracy better for that section. So the idea here being that at the end, we can really just decide which movie is going to be better to watch for Pearl Harbor Day, the actual movie called Pearl Harbor or Tora Tora Tora, as far as historical accuracy is concerned. Ready?
I am if you are.
Alrighty. So, kicking this off with the prelude, with Tora Tora Tora, it says that the reason for Pearl Harbor was because of a trade embargo imposed by the U.S. on Japan. Being a small island, Japan that is, it's only a matter of time before they run out of raw materials, so Japan essentially decides that war is inevitable. And since war is inevitable, it's best to attack first, strike the first blow. And then on Pearl Harbor's side, doesn't really mention any of this, but it has a lot of backstory that doesn't really have anything to do with Pearl Harbor. It tells the story from the side of two fictional friends who grow up to be pilots. According to this story, World War II really has begun, but the United States isn't part of it. So the pilots, in this case, was it Rafe, which is played by Ben Affleck, he decides to fly in the Eagle Squadron to help out during the Battle of Britain with the battles raging over in Europe. And then while he's gone, Danny, who's played by Josh Harnett, he's transferred to Pearl Harbor. So a lot of this stuff that's kind of leading up to, but not really talking about the political side of things. And then meanwhile, Rafe is shot down, presumed dead. And so then there's kind of this love triangle that forms between the two of them and Rafe's girlfriend, played by Kate Beckinsale. So this aspect of it, what about the, let's go kind of go back to Tora Tora Tora. What about the trade embargo? Was that correct in showing that that was one of the reasons for going to war?
That really was one of the reasons that Japan was willing to go to war at that time, yeah. The Japanese government was a monarchy at the time. The emperor was essentially regarded as a god, and the citizens were beholden to him. So in an attempt to capitalize on the colonial expansion that they saw the rest of the world going after, Japan decided that they had some pretty lofty goals for, I guess, expanding their own territory.
Okay.
They invaded China and Manchuria, and they took control of the Chinese resources, all the imports into the country. And that kind of made America mad. So eventually it led to an embargo on oil exports to the country. And the Japanese Empire was, you know, growing increasingly indignant and desperate to establish itself as a world power. It was refusing to be bullied. And when they realized that they were down to, I think it was only 2 years of oil reserves, they felt compelled to strike out against America.
Oh, okay. So their expansion started in China and then it sounds like they kind of used up a lot of their resources in that campaign.
Yeah, definitely. And then just general use within the country. You know, they were trying to build themselves up and make themselves bigger than they actually were. So that, you know, that takes up a lot of fuel.
Yeah, I guess war has that effect on
it does.
Expansion. So then what about the way kind of Pearl Harbor sets a lot of that up? It doesn't really, as I recall, and granted, I just watched it, but my memory is horrible. As I recall, it doesn't really talk about that side of it as much. But was there actually Americans involved in it, as that movie shows, the Battle of Britain, before the U.S. was even officially a part of World War II?
that aspect of the film is entirely fictionalized. Active duty service members were not asked to fly in the Royal Air Force, and they weren't even allowed to begin with. So that was entirely made up, I guess, for the romantic flair, you know, take one of the main characters away to build up tension. But yeah, that didn't actually happen.
It's interesting. I did a little bit of research on it too. And I found that there were people that flew for, in the Battle of Britain, but they weren't, like you said, they weren't active duty by any means. They were actually, you know, civilians and stuff from different countries.
Yeah, exactly. The U.S. knew that they were going to war. They knew that war was inevitable. They weren't going to give up their best pilots to send over to another country to fight in, you know, another country's war when one was beating on our doorstep.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, if you go to the Royal Air Force's official website, and I'll put a link in the show notes to that, but they have a roll of honor of all of the pilots that flew during the Battle of Britain. There were some 574 pilots from other countries, and 11 of those were from the U.S. So not a really significant role.
Yeah, so what are the odds then that Rafe would have been one of them?
Yeah, that these two just happened to be happened to be there.
Yeah, that's not looking good.
So kind of a little more generally, rather than just kind of that main setup to the prelude, was there anything about Tora, Tora, Tora that struck you as either they did a really good job, you know, in portraying this accurately, or maybe on the other side, just something that was glaringly inaccurate?
Between the two films, Tora, Tora, Tora was hands down the most accurate with how they showed the events leading up to the attack. For the film, they actually brought in technical advisors who'd been a part of the planning process for Pearl Harbor. So they really tried to get into the mindset of the Japanese. This, of course, drew a lot of criticism, I guess you could say, from patriotic folks in the West. They sort of felt that the Japanese were... They sort of felt that the directors were trying to take an apologist approach to history, but really the film dedicated a lot of
mention of that, the ambassador from Japan kind of wanting to basically, as the movie implies, almost declare war before the actual attack happens, kind of leading up to that prelude. Was that something that actually happened there? And I know that's kind of something that is, I guess, in addition to the embargo and that aspect that we've already talked about. But with Tora, Tora, Tora really focusing heavily on that, I just wanted to touch on that, is if that was something that actually happened at all.
That was an international requirement, actually. The Hague Convention in 1907 required that countries declare war on one another before they launch any attacks. Japan knew that they were going to go for America. They knew that that's what it was going to come down to. I'm sure there were some within Japan who felt that, you know, a declaration of war, like, let's just go ahead and get this over with. Let's get it started. Let's get things underway. That way we can have all the oil we need.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that makes sense. I found some conflicting reports on that. I heard some that would say that, but then others saying that the actual document that the Japanese government gave was more that they were just breaking off the diplomatic negotiations, not really a declaration of war, kind of a, yeah, this is going to happen, kind of almost a obvious, you know, first step, but not really something that would indicate that there was a war coming right away.
Yeah, that was called the 14-part message, actually. Japan sent that on December 7th. It wasn't finished being translated until 2 o'clock that afternoon.
And that's Pearl Harbor time, or because that was in Washington?
That was Washington, D.C. time, yep. Okay. So it was a little late. The attack was already underway, and it was, I read through it yesterday, it was kind of vague. It was hard to tell that they were saying, we are going to attack you.
Yeah.
It really came across as, these are our grievances. This isn't working out. It read kind of like a breakup letter, but not an attack letter.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if you're putting yourself in the context of that, if you really do want to sneak attack, you're not going to declare war ahead of time. And then I know that, you know, you're saying that there was an international idea of having to declare war before you actually do it. But if there's one thing you're not going to do ahead of time, I mean, it's war, right? I mean, it's not like you're being friendly. It's not like you're giving people the benefit of the doubt type thing. You are declaring war.
Yeah, and I mean, that was before World War II even. The Hague Convention was in 1907.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, I mean, that would have gone through World War I, right? I mean, that was even before World War I.
Yeah. So it was before World War I. So war was changing really, really quickly, the entire makeup of how wars were fought. So this was new territory for everyone.
Huh. So what about Pearl Harbor then, kind of still on the prelude, but... was there anything with Pearl Harbor? You said that Tora 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 was much more accurate than on the other side, I'm assuming then Pearl Harbor being much more inaccurate. Was there anything that kind of stood out to you as being glaringly inaccurate for the way it kind of set up?
I don't think it was really necessarily glaringly inaccurate so much as it was they didn't really go for the actual buildup. The first half of that movie is really just building up the characters. The writers, the directors, they were not historians by any means. I think they were just trying to capitalize on the success of Titanic and, you know, have this romantic love story set with the backdrop of a tragic event from history. At its core, the film is nothing more than that. So they really didn't spend a whole lot of time going over what was leading up to the war itself.
Hmm. So the most inaccurate part being that pretty much nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. They go over it briefly. They show the Japanese commanders and whatnot. They don't really get into the reasons so much. They don't build it up in the way that Tora 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 does.
Okay. So to summarize the prelude, if you had to pick between the two, and I just based on our conversation, I think I'm going to guess which one, but which one would you say is more accurate for the way the events are depicted for the prelude up to the war?
I think it's very much obviously Tora 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 between the two films. The whole storyline about Rafe joining the Eagle Squadron in England, that was a huge red flag for me. That told me that, you know, this is not going to be a film that concerns itself with actual history. It's a great story. It's very romantic. Tora 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 was largely about the reasons why we ultimately went to war with Japan, why Japan decided to attack us. So I have to go with Tora Tora Tora.
I think I'm going to agree with you there. I think just the the mere fact of, well, being fictional characters that really just kind of focusing on we're gonna have to go with Tora 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 as well. All right, so now we're to the attack itself. For Tora Tora Tora, it shows the surprise attack beginning at dawn on December 7th, 1941. According to this movie, the airplanes are spotted by Hickam Field, but they think that they're a group of American B-17 bombers. And then there's another mishap that occurs kind of on top of that, that when there's a message of warning of a possible attack from General Marshall, in Washington, D.C., that message unfortunately isn't marked as urgent. So it doesn't really make it to Pearl Harbor before the attack. And then during the attack itself, the Japanese launch two waves of fighters instead of launching more and destroy a number of ships in the harbor. But then Admiral Nagumo refuses to launch a third wave of attacks, even though you can get a sense in the movie that pretty much everybody else wants to launch another wave of attacks while they have the Americans kind of on running from defense. And then, but his rationale behind that is he's afraid that the war is just starting and he has to make sure that the entire fleet makes it back safely. He also doesn't really know where the American carriers are, so he doesn't want to be exposed to attack themselves. And so that's Tora Tora Tora, kind of the attack itself. And then as far as Pearl Harbor, it's really more of a complete surprise in Pearl Harbor, since really the two pilots arrived in Pearl Harbor just the day before. They wake up to the sound of the attack going on. So it's kind of a new environment, completely by surprise there. And then these two pilots, Ben Affleck and Josh Hartnett, make their way to an airfield where they manage to get off the ground and be pretty much the only Americans in the skies. They shoot down seven Japanese planes, and we see a lot more destruction of the ships in the harbor, but there's not really a lot of details about the waves of the planes or the actual ships that are being damaged. And so it's really, again, just kind of from the perspective of those two pilots. So, all right, so that's kind of a setup for the attack. For Tora Tora, was it correct in showing that there were some warning signs of the attack beforehand, like the being spotted on another part of the island, but thinking that they're American bombers, or even that message warning of a possible attack? Were there some warning signs that, for whatever reason, just didn't make it to Pearl in time?
I think it was pretty clear before the attack even started, before December 7th, even before December at all. It was pretty clear that the war drums were beating. So Japan had already aligned itself with Nazi Germany, which was at war with our biggest allies. Like, we knew that we were going to go to war. We knew that an attack was going to happen. We just really didn't know when. The relationship was strained because of the oil embargoes. The talks really were not going well. Everyone knew that an attack was going to happen. There were some signs on that day that were missed. Like I said just a bit ago, the message wasn't received in Washington until 2 o'clock. That should have given, some sort of warning, I suppose. But even more than that, the B-17s coming in from the north, that was something that actually did happen that day. They picked it up on radar. They thought it was a fleet of American planes that were coming from California. And, they didn't really think anything of it. They just thought it was those planes. They didn't know it was a swarm of Japanese aircraft.
As I'm recording this right now, on the other side of my door is my cat. He's always wherever I am as I'm working on the podcast. He watches all the movies with me, and he lets me know when it's time to stop working by sitting on my keyboard. I love the little guy. And as a pet owner, that means there are expenses like vet bills that can pop up, and sometimes that's unexpected. That's why I was happy to learn about today's sponsor, EarnIn, because they can help make sure that I've got the money to cover those unexpected vet bills. EarnIn is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. Now you can join over 3.5 million customers. Get the peace of mind that comes with EarnIn. Download EarnIn today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the EarnIn app, type in True Story under podcast when you sign up. It'll really help the show. True Story under podcast. EarnIn is a financial technology company, not a bank. Subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC. Thanks, EarnIn.
The founder of Panasonic once said,
"We can lead more meaningful and constructive lives
through the pursuit of activities that will ensure
a better today than yesterday,
a better tomorrow than today."
Panasonic is committed to creating a greener,
more equitable future
for everyone.
Explore Panasonic Green Impact
at na.panasonic.com/green impact.
So what about the third wave then? In Tora Tora Tora, you see the Japanese launching a couple waves and then stopping. Was that something that actually happened, or did they just kind of keep pounding as long as they could?
There was supposed to be a third wave of planes that day. That was Japan's plan for December 7th. They were going to send a third wave and take out all of the fuel supplies at the harbor and at the airfields.
Oh, wow.
Ultimately, they decided not to do that. They didn't want to take any losses. And, you know, through the day, they only lost 29 planes out of the 350 plus that they sent out. So, you know, they came out on top of things pretty well. I think if they had sent that third wave, you know, by that point, America was ready to fight back. They had sort of positioned themselves to where they were able to shoot down some of the planes. They would have been expecting more by that point. So it would have, you know, it would have meant some pretty big losses for Japan.
It's one of those what if situations, you know, what, because if they would have targeted the, you know, gas and all that kind of stuff, that would have been a major blow, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, not that it wasn't a major blow anyway, but, you know, all of those supplies and everything, that's what you need in your rebuilding effort. And so rebuilding would take that much longer if it's gone.
Yep. They would have then had to, you know, bring in the fuel from California. That would have taken at least a week. Who knows how much they could have gotten. It, yeah, it would have been really, really bad.
I think I saw a quote somewhere from Admiral Nimitz. He said that if they had wiped out Pearl Harbor shore facilities, then World War II would have been prolonged for at least two more years without the U.S. really being able to even start naval operations in the Pacific for at least a year later than they were able to. So, I mean, it's just kind of, yeah, I mean, just complete devastation would have, I mean, two more years of the war, just imagine what sort of chaos would have happened. You think of all the horrible events that happened, especially, you know, towards the end of the war in Europe there, that the U.S. was able to liberate a lot of that. But if they had fallen behind, or even if we would have won the war, I mean, that's one of those things that, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's one of those what if situations, right?
Yeah, it really is. It's hard telling, you know, what would have happened to some of the ships that we were actually able to salvage from Pearl Harbor. You know, would those have been more damaged? Would they have been unable to be replaced at that point? We really have no way of knowing. It's all just speculative, but I think it would have been pretty bad.
Yeah. All right. So what about Pearl Harbor? When Pearl Harbor shows that our two heroes in particular are the ones that are able to make it in the air and actually get up in the sky and start fighting back against the Japanese, were there any American pilots that were actually able to get off the ground that day?
There were. Yep. This is an aspect of Pearl Harbor that's definitely true. Rafe and Danny were modeled after two second lieutenants named George Welch and Kenneth Taylor. And they actually raced to the airfield in Haleiwa in a Buick. So the movie got even that part right, as far as this aspect is concerned. They were the first American pilots up in the air that day. They barely made it up. Somehow they made it through the Japanese throng. They were able to take out six Japanese aircraft. So I think the movie shows seven. In real life, they took out six. That's still pretty good.
Yeah.
The whole love triangle thing that the characters have going on, that wasn't something that happened with George Welch and Kenneth Taylor. So they were pretty displeased about that aspect of the movie. But still, it had to feel pretty good being memorialized in that way.
Yeah. I actually noticed in watching Tora, Tora, Tora again just the other day that it does show two pilots getting up off the ground as well. It's a really brief sequence, but you see them getting off the ground, and one of the guys talks to the other one and says something about George. And so yeah, it also does kind of mention George Welch, right?
That's a little nod to reality.
Yeah. So yep. Even there, Tora has it beat a little bit.
Yep, it does. Yeah, there was actually an incident that I spoke about in season two of the podcast, the Niihau incident. And that only took place because the American pilots were able to get up off the ground that day. So they shot at a pilot named Shigenori Nishikaichi, and they pierced his fuel tank, and he had to crash land on Niihau, and it turned into a big ordeal. But that wouldn't have happened if they hadn't been able to get off the ground. So, yep, that aspect is very much true.
Now, kind of tying that back into something we saw in the prelude, do you know if those two pilots, if this is kind of the first indication that the two people, and I've said that they're fictional because the actual names, you know, Rafe and I can't remember Josh Hartnett character's name, but
Danny,
that's right. Yep. I should remember that one.
That should be the easy one.
Yeah, no kidding. But, you know, those two, obviously, if they're modeled off these other characters, then those characters themselves aren't real. But then the question would be, do you know if George Welch and Kenneth Taylor actually fought in the Battle of Britain, or if either one of them did, like the movie shows the pilots doing, Rafe doing, I believe, in Pearl Harbor?
I can't say for certain. I don't believe they did. I'm pretty sure they were active duty, so they wouldn't have been allowed.
Yeah, well, that's a good point.
Yeah, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but yeah, I don't think they did.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think kind of what we had alluded to before, when there were 11 Americans that fought in the Battle of Britain,
yeah,
and none of them were active duty, so them being active duty and pretty much seals the deal. I don't think it was them, unless they went under a fake name and, you know, hid or something.
Yeah, well, some of the nurses in the movie did that, so.
Yeah. All right, so in terms of just kind of the general historical accuracy for Tor, Tor, Tor and the way it depicts the attack itself, was there anything that we haven't talked about yet that just really kind of stood out to you as either being really accurate or completely inaccurate, just kind of one way or the other?
I think one of the most interesting accurate parts is that one of the scenes shows an airplane crash that actually literally was an airplane crash. So Pearl Harbor, you know, it was all computer animation, all that good stuff. But Tora, 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 they had to use actual props. And there's a scene where a plane comes in for a landing and one of its wheels hasn't come down. I don't know if you remember that.
That was one of the B-17s, wasn't it?
Yep, it was. That actually happened during filming. So the landing gear was supposed to come down. It didn't. It crashed into the runway. The people you see running for their lives are literally running for their lives in that moment. So they decided to use that footage in the film. So it's like eerily accurate in that regard.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. I didn't know that.
Yep.
Wow. That's one way to get realism, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. Show people who don't have to act scared. They really are.
Yeah. So then what about on the Pearl Harbor side? Was there anything that stood out to you as being either really accurate? We kind of mentioned that it does a pretty good job of showing, well, at least the aspect of two pilots getting in the air. Was there anything else that stood out as being accurate or inaccurate for the attack itself?
I think the general atmosphere was pretty accurate. You know, they do a really good job of showing the chaos of the day, how confused everyone actually was. That's something that, you know, Tora, 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 they tried, but they were working with a limited budget. They didn't have computers on hand to be able to do it. I think Pearl Harbor stands out in that way. But as far as inaccuracy is concerned, I have some gripes for Pearl Harbor too. they show the Maryland, the Nevada, the Tennessee, and the Pennsylvania all sinking. But in reality, all of those ships were saved after Pearl Harbor. They salvaged them. They made them work again. They sent them off to war.
Did they actually sink at Pearl Harbor and then they repaired them? Or was it that they didn't sink there?
The Tennessee, well, all of them were attacked. The Tennessee was listing to one side. It almost sank. They were able to upright it and, you know, get things back in place. Okay. The Nevada was grounded, I believe it is, right outside the harbor. Mm-hmm. So that one took minor damage. They were able to salvage that one as well. All four of the ships, you know, they made it out of the war, even though in the film they show those ones sinking. Yep. And that seems odd to me because they didn't mention the USS Utah, which actually did sink at Pearl Harbor and is still sitting in the harbor today. But the film made no mention of that one.
Interesting.
Yep. Huh.
But what was the one that was the Arizona, right, that it showed sinking that actually had people on it?
Yeah, the Arizona was, of course, the big one of the day. 77% of the ship's crew were lost. So they do a decent job of showing, you know, how devastating that part of the attack was.
Yeah.
And they also showed the USS Oklahoma. So they did a decent job showing the USS Oklahoma and how the men were trapped within the ship and they were drowning. And so the film did pretty good in that regard.
Yeah. I think something that kind of stuck out to me there was it really seemed like they were pushing that these two characters Rafe and Danny were like the center of everything. I mean, yeah, they, not only did yeah, they get
they
up
had and, to.
Yeah, I know, but it's like they you know they're the pilots that fly up there, and then as soon as they land, they drive the 10 or so miles from the field to the to where the Arizona was, and they you know jump in the water and try to help there. And I don't know.
Yeah, I got to paint the hero, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. But but I that was something that I that just really stood out to me as kind of stretching there. But then it was I really liked the realistic aspect of Tora Tora Tora, where it was you could tell they didn't use CG, which did make it a lot less in the fight itself. Like Pearl Harbor, that one shot of like following the bomb and things like that. That's kind of really cool stuff. But I liked to me it felt more real, the fight, the actual attack in Tora Tora Tora, because there was a lot of confusion. There's just a lot of people all over the place, and a lot of people that you didn't really know, because that's the only time you see them in the movie, instead of trying to be like, oh, these two people are everywhere.
Yeah, there definitely was. Using actual props, it did wonders for showing, or for making it more real, I guess, yeah, is a good way to put it. Until you know what to look for with those props. So there were some subtle mistakes. You know, the bridge on the Agaki was supposed to be on the port side of the ship, but it was shown on the starboard, because they actually filmed that on the USS Yorktown. So,
interesting. Well, yeah, obviously.
Yep. So, you know, little things like that. The planes, you know, some of them weren't painted the color they were supposed to, but, you know, we saw the same thing in Pearl Harbor as well. So.
All right. So, as far as the attack is concerned, overall historical accuracy, somebody's wanting, picking between those two movies, wanting to get a good idea of what the attack was like, which one would you recommend, Tora 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 or Pearl Harbor?
For this one, I'd have to go with Pearl Harbor.
Okay.
I feel iffy about saying that, because there was a lot in there that really was fictionalized, but I think they did a better job, and it's because they had computer graphics at hand. I think they did a better job of showing really just how confusing and chaotic and like how unbelievable the whole event was.
Okay. So yeah, I could get that.
Just from a feeling aspect, the way that it felt to be there.
Yeah.
I think Pearl Harbor won this one.
Yeah. That has to be really tough to get across, because it is just, it's pure chaos, but you're trying to tell a story at the same time. And so it's the surprise attack, but then it's kind of, how do you show this from all these different angles of, you know, it's not just one ship that's being attacked, right? So you have to show all of these different ships and all the different crews. And yeah, it's a massive undertaking for sure. And you can kind of get an idea of how tough it is for either one of the movies to be able to do that, even with the benefit of CG and VFX and things like that. It's still really hard to show that.
Yeah, it really is. I liked though that they brought in some minor characters to show more of it.
Hmm.
So like Cuba Gooding Jr.'s character, he was Dory Miller. He was an actual person on the Arizona that day. He was with the skipper of the, I think he was with the skipper of the West Virginia when he died. So the film shows that aspect of it. And I like that they bring in some of the minor characters, little subplots, I suppose, to add a bit more effect to it.
Yeah, I think Tora 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 had that character as well, too.
Yeah.
Very briefly, just kind of showing him getting on a gun and shooting for about 3 seconds before it cut away.
Yeah, I think he was a bit more angry in the Pearl Harbor version. There was a bit more passion in there, but...
Well, it's Cuba Gooding Jr.
Yeah, exactly.
Alrighty. So, I mean, I think for that one, I'm going to have to go with Tora Tora Tora. Ironically, for the same... Well, the opposite of the reason that you said. I don't know. even though like my background is in CG and VFX, so maybe that's why. But I enjoy good VFX. I enjoy it for sure. But I also like the realism that came with Tora, where it was just the real planes. You know, you could tell that it was the real planes. Yeah, there were limitations to what they could do there, but and maybe another part of it too was I actually got to see those planes that they used in the movie now are used by the Commemorative Air Force, and they put on a show called Tora Tora Tora. And so the Air Force base by me, a couple years ago, they had them come in and they performed kind of the whole reenactment. They tell the story of Pearl Harbor, and they have these Zeros flying over, and then they have the American planes that go up and they shoot them, and there's pyro and explosions and just huge things. So maybe that was kind of part of it too. It was just kind of that sense of nothing like what it was actually there, because you're in the middle of an air show, but still just kind of cool to hear it and see the visuals and feel the heat and all that kind of stuff.
That is really cool. Now I want to go to Oklahoma to see that. Is this like an annual thing?
Well, that particular part. So the air show that they have here is not. They used to be annually, but with budget cuts and stuff, now it's like semi-annually every couple of years or so. But they don't always do that. Like last year, they had it last year, and it was a reenactment for Vietnam, and they kind of showed how they would extract a soldier using Vietnam era planes and stuff. But I think cool the Tora 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 show, you can find it online, and I think they do air shows around the country. But yeah, it's pretty cool.
I did not know that was a thing. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to look that up.
Check it. Yeah. Check it out. I'm sure being up there in Ohio, they've got in Wright-Patterson. There,
oh so yeah. Down
I'm
down
sure
by
they've
Dayton.
Got something going on.
Yeah. There's gotta be something like that.
Yeah. All right, so after the attack, we have the aftermath. Dun, dun, dun. In the aftermath in Tora Tora Tora, it shows in Washington that the kind of what we talked about, the Japanese diplomats messed up by delivering a message after the attack took place, meaning that the attack happened while technically the two countries were peaceful. And then after that, you see Admiral Yamamoto back in Japan regret the decision to attack Pearl Harbor, saying, quote, "I fear all we have done is to awaken a sleeping giant and fill him with a terrible resolve," end quote. And that's a quote that I know has kind of been attributed to him and been very popular. So not something that was made up in this movie necessarily. But and then in Pearl Harbor, it shows the two pilots. They join a mission by Major Jimmy Doolittle, who's played by Alec Baldwin, and they pilot B-25 Mitchell bombers from an aircraft carrier to retaliate against the Japanese by bombing their homeland, kind of the first strike against the Japanese homeland. And in that mission, it's a success, but they crash land in China, killing one of the two heroes of the film, and then that leaves the other one to get the girl in a true Hollywood fashion ending.
Super romantic.
So as far as Tora 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 and kind of the aftermath of that, and we kind of already talked about the message for kind of before that. Did Tora 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 show that accurately, but then also kind of afterwards the regret that you kind of see of some of the commanders, in particular Admiral Yamamoto, regretting that decision to attack and thinking that, well, maybe the attack on Pearl Harbor was not such a good idea after all?
Yeah, we touched on it briefly with the Hague Convention thing, but that became a big debate after the war was over, whether or not Japan had gone about things the correct way. So Japan felt that they were in the right because they did send the 14-part message, but the problem was that it wasn't received until 2 p.m. They weren't sure if it was supposed to go to the Japanese embassy in Washington, or they weren't sure if it was supposed to come from the Japanese embassy in Washington, D.C., or if it was supposed to go to the American embassy in Tokyo. So there was a little bit of confusion there, and it was encoded. They had to translate it from there. It became a big debate after the war was over.
I could see that. I mean, it's not like that's not something that you really practice. Going to war. Where do we actually send this document? And you're not going to ask the other side where you're going to send the document.
Yeah, I hope we don't have to practice that.
Well, no, for sure.
Yeah, as far as Yamamoto is concerned, there's really no indication to say that he actually said those words. You know, they're the most famous words in the entire movie, I would argue. He certainly did regret it to an extent. He felt that Japan couldn't win a war with America if it was prolonged. If they were going to do it, if they were going to win, they needed to do it quickly, get it over with, and, you know, call that their success. He knew that if it was a long, drawn-out affair, that Japan simply could not win that. So he regretted it, and, you know, at least to some degree. But we don't really know if he said those actual words.
Do you know kind of why he regretted it? Was some of it because of the raw materials, kind of what we were talking about beforehand, where Japan had limited natural resources?
Yeah, I think so. I think they knew that they were going to have to invade other countries in order to, you know, take their resources in order to fight a war. And that would detract from their ability to fight back against America across the Pacific. So I think he understood that, you know, they'd gotten themselves into something much bigger than most of them had realized.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, so even if he didn't say that line, it's a line that could have been said plausible, yeah, perhaps.
I think it reflects his sentiments pretty well.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting that they carried, I think, that exact line over into Pearl Harbor as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's something that I said it wasn't made for the movie, but that was always my thought. But I guess the movie came out and, you know, before I was born. So maybe I just assumed that it was something that kind of was picked up, you know, before then, but maybe it was actually from Tora, Tora, Tora. Do you know if that was something before the movie, or was that something that Tora, Tora, Tora kind of started as him saying and then, you know, played on in later movies?
Yeah. It's my understanding that it was something that the writers of Tora, Tora, Tora attributed to him.
Oh, okay.
He could have said it. It's certainly poetic. He was a wise man. It could have come out of his mouth. I don't think there's any record to say for sure that he actually said it, though.
Okay. Okay. Yep. Interesting. Yeah. And I know he actually passed away before the war was over. He was, the Americans cracked Japanese codes and found out his flight itinerary, towards middle of the war, I guess, in 1943. And so they launched an attack and shot his plane down and killed him. So we will never know. That's one of those mysteries. All right. So what about in Pearl Harbor, when they're talking about the retaliation for the surprise attack by launching bombers? Was that something that actually happened?
That really did happen. Yeah. In April of 1942, the U.S. attacked Japan in what was called the Doolittle Raid. So in the film Pearl Harbor, Doolittle is, of course, played by Alec Baldwin. He's there in the very beginning with Rafe trying to get him to not go to Europe and then telling him he should. He comes back at the end to play the hero once more. That's something that really did happen. They did a decent job, I think, of depicting how it happened for the most part, like the structure of the event. One of the biggest problems for me, though, was that none of the people who actually went on the Doolittle Raid in real life were at Pearl Harbor.
Okay.
They were all from a regiment in South Carolina. None of them were actually at Pearl Harbor, although the film shows that, you know, I think most of the people who were on that raid, they show as being from Pearl Harbor. Yeah. You know, it's Danny and Rafe's friends from Pearl Harbor.
Yeah. But, yeah, and the two pilots that were, you know, Battle of Britain and then carried over into Pearl Harbor, the only two that made it in the air, and then also leading the raid.
They sure are heroes, aren't they?
Yeah, for sure.
Yep. So the Doolittle Raid was something that actually happened. They did attack Japan, and then they knew from there that they weren't going to be able to return to the USS Hornet because their planes were too big to land on the aircraft carrier again.
Oh, okay.
So from there, they had to fly to China, They all crash landed in China, except for one that crash landed in Russia. Three American pilots were killed. The ones in Russia were held for about a year. So that's something that really did happen.
Yep. And was it something that in the movie they show that, you know, they drop their bombs and but it doesn't really seem to have much of an effect other than, I mean, it pumps up their morale and stuff like that. But it's not really, as far as the overall war is concerned, the movie doesn't make it seem like it's as big of a hit as Pearl Harbor was for the U.S. Would you say that's kind of a fair assessment?
Yeah, it definitely didn't have a major effect. I think what they were really going for was psychological. They wanted to show Japan, you know, you can sneak up and attack us, but we're going to do the exact same thing to you. So it wasn't so much about causing damage so as it was about, you know, telling Japan that you're not quite safe either. So,
Okay, well, yeah. Makes sense. So as far as the aftermath for Tora Tora Tora, was there anything else that kind of stood out as being accurate or on the flip side, kind of glaringly inaccurate with the way that it depicts the aftermath of the attack?
Tora 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 really doesn't show a whole lot of the aftermath. The film drops off for the most part after the attack is over. I really did like, though, that they showed Yamamoto regretting the incident, regretting the attack, I suppose. That sort of, I guess, shows Japan in a more positive light, shows that not everyone there was bloodthirsty. Some people knew that they had opened up a can of worms that they really just were not ready for. So
that makes sense. How about for Pearl Harbor then? Was there anything that kind of stood out, again, being either really accurate or inaccurate either way?
It was nice that with Pearl Harbor, they took the story past the attack. At least they showed the Doolittle raid. I got to give them credit there. It's, you know, an event in history that most people overlook because they just don't know about it. But
when that actually happened? Was that like right after Pearl Harbor, or was it there some time between that?
It was in April of 1942, so it was about 4 months later. Well, about five.
Pretty quick, but you know, not like right away.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. So I like that they took it a little bit farther, that they showed that, you know, we did raid Japan soon afterwards. The fact that they showed men from Pearl Harbor doing it, and of course it's because they had to have the hero.
Right.
But the fact that they showed men from Pearl Harbor doing it rather than attributing it to, you know, the men from South Carolina who really were a part of it, that kind of bothered me a bit. But the directors really weren't concerned with the historicity of things anyway, so.
Yeah. Well, I guess on that note, for overall, kind of the aftermath side, which would you go for, the historical accuracy, Tora 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 or Pearl Harbor?
This is a hard one for me. Pearl Harbor was the only one that really showed it.
Yeah.
So much, but they did a poor job of it. So I really almost want to give the credit to Tora 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 because they didn't even try. Like, they showed Yamamoto feeling that it was maybe a mistake, like, drop it at that.
Yeah. No,
Pearl Harbor, on the other hand, you know, I don't know.
You know, it's funny. I thought the same thing, and I know I kind of built this structure, so it's kind of, maybe it's on me, but as I was kind of going through it, I was like, you know, yeah, there's not much there, but that's actually to their advantage because I like that they showed the Doolittle raid in Pearl Harbor, but I didn't like how they portrayed it. And so at least for me, I'm going to have to give this one to Tora Tora Tora, because at least it just kind of, it drops off, you know, it shows the attack and I mean, doesn't show much beyond that, which I think is to its advantage.
Yeah, I think you're definitely right in that.
Okay. So overall, recapping, we had a prelude to war. You went with Tora Tora Tora, as did I. The attack itself, you went with Pearl Harbor. I went with Tora Tora Tora. And then with the aftermath, we both picked Tora Tora Tora. So ultimately, I think if someone were to pick between these two movies to watch in honor of Pearl Harbor Day on December 7th, which one would you recommend? Even though your voting record so far is Tora 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 2-1, two out of three, you're welcome to change it for kind of overall purposes in case there's something we hadn't quite talked about yet.
I think if you're looking for historical accuracy, you have to go with Torah, Torah, Torah. That's hands down the more accurate. But if you're looking for something that's emotionally compelling and it has plenty of action still and it has a love story that maybe your partner might also enjoy, then go with Pearl Harbor. The former has its historical merits, while the latter has, I think, a more compelling and emotional storyline. So,
okay. Yeah, that's fair. I could see that. And I think it's worth pointing out that both of these are movies. They're entertainment. They're not really intended to be documentaries. They're, and we're kind of talking about historical accuracy, but if you really, really want to see something accurate, go check out a documentary or actually read some books about it.
Yeah, for sure.
Listen to your podcast about
it. Yeah, listen to season two of Omitted.
There you go. There you go.
So I personally, this week, I'm going to be watching Pearl Harbor. It's not totally accurate, but I still enjoy the film. You know, 2001 era Josh Hartnett is reason enough to watch it, in my opinion. So I'm going to have to go with Pearl Harbor.
Okay. Okay. I could give that. I might actually watch both of them. I would probably pick between Torah, Torah, Torah. But I mean, there's nothing wrong with watching both of them or, you know, pick some other ones as well. So, yeah.
Yeah. There's plenty of them out there.
For sure. For sure. And I think the more that we can kind of shine a light on that, the less likely it is to be forgotten. And even if it's not 100% historically accurate, hopefully that'll kind of spark people to go research what actually happened and find the true story.
Yeah, definitely. That's one thing that I'm really glad I saw Pearl Harbor when I did, when I was a kid, because it did pique my interest. It did make me, you know, want to learn more about the actual event. Mm-hmm.
Good, good. Well, I know this format has been a little bit different than our typical episode, but I really hope that you enjoyed this, listening to this, as much as I've enjoyed chatting with Corey. And thanks so much for your time, Corey. But before we wrap up, can you let everybody know where they can find your podcast?
Yeah, you can find Omitted on just about any podcatcher of your choosing. So if you use iTunes, it's going to be on the Apple Podcast. Sorry. Excuse me. Sorry, Apple. So if you use Apple Podcasts, it's going to be on there. If you have an Android, you can find it in the Google Play Store. You can also stream the episodes on omittedpodcast.com.
Well, thanks again, Corey. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
This episode of Based on a True Story was written and produced by me, Dan Lefebvre, along with, of course, my good friend Corey from over at the Omitted Podcast. If you want to learn more about the attack on Pearl Harbor, I really would recommend checking out Corey's podcast. He's got some great stories that happened around the events depicted in the movies that you've probably never even heard about. Go check it out at omittedpodcast.com. And as always, I'll add a link to Corey's show over at basedonatruestorypodcast.com as well. Okay, now it's time for the answer to our two truths and a lie game from the beginning of the episode. As a refresher, here are the two truths and one lie. Number one, there weren't any American pilots who made it into the air during the attack on Pearl. Number two, there was a document sent by the Japanese government to the American government that didn't make it before the attack. Number three, the Americans retaliated for Pearl Harbor by launching a surprise attack of their own on Japan, led by Major Doolittle. Did you find out which one is a lie? The lie is number one. As Corey mentioned, there were a couple of American pilots who made it into the air during the attack on Pearl Harbor. They were George Welch and Kenneth Taylor. So, not the same characters that we see in the movie Pearl Harbor, but the event did happen. And now, it's your turn. What movie are you going to watch for Pearl Harbor Day? Or is there another film you'd recommend watching in remembrance of December 7th, 1941? Hop onto the Based on a True Story Facebook group and let's chat about it. Or if you prefer, you can find me directly on Twitter where I'm at Dan Lefebvre, D-A-N-L-E-F-E-B. The show is also on Instagram where I like to post some photos of the real faces and places behind what we've learned about here on this show and other episodes as well. You can find that on Instagram, it's at Based on a True Story Podcast. But if social media isn't your thing, you can always say hi by emailing me at dan@basedonatruestorypodcast.com. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll chat with you again really soon.